Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., all rights reserved.
Welcome back. It's 12 after the hour. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and I'm glad you're here. Joan Pryde is our guest. She's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors, and she's here too. Joan, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Jim. Good morning.
It's good to have you back, as always. And Joan, as you know, folks, is senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. They're the folks who have been producing now almost, Joan, we're coming up on 84 years. In a couple
not
of weeks.
Not me personally,
in
you
a
know.
Couple of weeks. Yeah, you came on right after they opened the
you're right.
Right. You were like the second wave of employees that they hired. But
yeah.
But in a couple of weeks, a week and a half or so, Kiplinger will be 84 years old. It's a great American success story. And of course, Joan and I work off of the Kiplinger letter, the original, the flagship document that Kiplinger produces. We work off of that every week.
That's right.
And Joan, the news this week and the last few days, well, actually the last several weeks has been kind of schizoids, kind of gotten everybody weirded out about how things are going. The subprime market is getting has been pretty rough and
right.
A lot of challenges there. But those were kind of sector. A lot of the news was sector news, in my opinion. It was, you know, news about the oil, the news about the subprime loans, which is a sector inside of a sector. Then there was, bad news about the financial markets and,
right.
And housing is down. And, you know, those are sectors. But then we started getting some adjustments to some broader indicators in the last few days, haven't we, Joan?
Well, I think so.
The jobs. The jobs were what had been projected to be pretty decent job growth numbers for July and August were actually adjusted downward, weren't they?
Right, and apparently no one expected that.
Yeah, that was a shock.
Yeah.
It shocked me, and you know how closely I track these
right.
metrics, Joan.
Right.
But
you do.
But
you really
yeah.
Do.
But well, no, I'm just making a joke. But seriously, it shocked me. I was very surprised, and I think that's been one of the things that's really been troubling. But you know, Joan, here's the interesting thing, and somebody pointed this out to me this week.
Yeah.
Maybe it may have been you earlier this week, I don't know. But even though the job growth went down significantly, wasn't anywhere close to what we've been doing for the last 4 years, unemployment still didn't go up.
Oh, that's interesting.
How about that?
Wow.
So, you know, and if you think about it, Joan, this economy has been, thanks to mine and your heroes, small business owners, we've created, what is it, something over 6 million jobs in the last 4 years?
Yeah, that's a staggering number.
Don't we deserve a summer off?
Yeah, I would think so. That's one way to look at it.
Well, there's a couple of other things to think about, Joan. Not only, I guess maybe there are like two or three things. Number one, the economy is slowing.
Right.
So that's going to be a damper on employment.
Yes.
Number two, a lot of people have grown to the point where they need more people, but they can't find the people.
Then that's a problem. They can't find the people with the right skills.
Exactly. And so there may be as many as 2 million jobs going wanting in America. And if that's the case and we can't find the people, then we can't hire anybody. So that's holding hiring down.
Right.
And number two, Joan, a natural progression of all of that is to say, well, if I can't find the people, I guess I'll just have to. That guy brought an automation proposal down by for me a couple of months ago, and I didn't do it because I was thought I could use people, but I guess maybe I'll automate now. So we bought technology.
Yeah, and see, I'm sure that's what's happening.
That's a lot of it because I think you heard me say, Joan, that I spoke one of the classic conversations I've ever had about this issue was with a guy who built a paper mill. And about a couple of 3 years ago, and I asked him. I said, "How many employees do you have?" He said, "Half as many." He said, "400," which is half as many as I needed for the paper mill that I built 10 years ago.
Ooh.
And I said, "What's the difference?" He said, "Technology."
Yeah, sure.
And Joan, we also know a report that came out a couple of years ago showed that China has lost more jobs to manufacturing than any other country in the world. And here we think they're taking all of our jobs and they should be growing in jobs. They actually lost manufacturing jobs because of automation, because of technology. Not losing them to other countries, losing them to their own technology. Exactly.
Their own use of technology. Right. Yeah. Wow.
It's a phenomenon that we have to, in my opinion, we have to balance with all this employment news. What do you think?
Well, sure, that makes total sense. Absolutely.
So the reason why I'm saying all this is I think it's important that we take all this into consideration before we get our knickers into a bind over all this,
so to speak.
And so anyway, I don't think there's any question, Joan, that we're heading into a little bit of a cooling off period for the economy,
a rough patch. Yeah,
we've got to absorb some bad news, some bad indicators, some bad performance. We got housing that's still, you know, people are saying some really bad things about housing.
Yeah.
Somebody, I read something in the journal yesterday, one guy called it a collapse of the housing industry. And then you throw on top of that the subprime stuff. In your life, Joan, have you ever heard Wall Street whining and clamoring for a rate cut as they are now? Have you noticed this?
Well, yeah, I think back in the Volcker days, sure.
Maybe so, but they were clamoring because the economy needed some help, and we were trying to fight inflation. The economy did need some help, but this clamoring is unseemly. It seems to me, Joan, because these people are clamoring because they made bad mistakes and they want the Fed to help them out. What's 0.25% going to do for that?
I'm not really sure.
It's really sad, and of course the Fed has this moral dilemma issue there, don't they? The moral hazard issue, don't they?
Well, yes.
Explain to the audience what the moral hazard is.
Well, moral hazard being, in this case, if you do too much to help the economy, what you're really doing isn't so much helping the economy, but sort of helping out folks who made their own bad investment decisions and sort of giving out the message that, well, you know, don't worry about the risks you take. We're going to be there to be your safety net no matter what happens.
When companies make bad decisions and they get themselves into a serious bind, you know, they have to be allowed, in a free market economy, they have to be allowed to sink or swim. The government can't bail them out, you know, notwithstanding Chrysler 25 or 30 years ago. Stand by, 20 after. We'll be right back with Joan Pride. Stay with us. Time. Don't forget the blog, and also you can subscribe to my newsletter, which is free. But if you just have a question, how do I do this? What's the definition of this? How do I do that? Go to AskJim.biz. That's our knowledge base. That's where you get small business answers, and you'll get them instantaneously. It works like a search engine, but it's a knowledge base. We anticipate your questions, so check it out and you get a chance. It's free, too. Joan Pride is our guest. She's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors, and we're talking about this economy. Joan, we were talking about the moral hazard. You were defining did a very good job, by the way, of explaining the moral hazard challenge, the dilemma that the Fed has right now, because the inflation is their number one thing that they wake up fighting every day. They don't wake up wondering whether to save countrywide or not. They wake up wondering what's inflation doing.
Right.
And so, if inflation somehow, the inflation numbers right now are not horrible, but they're not as good as they'd like for them to be. And so left to their own devices, I think the Fed would not change rates this month. Next Tuesday when they meet. I think if they weren't for this subprime meltdown and everything, I think they probably wouldn't make any adjustments. But everybody I know, including a former member of the Fed, Bob McTeer, was on last week, Joan, as you know, the former FOMC member.
Right.
He said he thought they were going to lower rates at least a quarter. Some people say a half, but you know, it looks like they're going to do it. And hopefully, where we got a challenge, Joan, and this is a topic you know very well.
Right.
If they lower rates, and that exacerbates inflation, And so inflation goes up and the economy still weakens. Tell the audience what we wind up with.
Oh, do I have to talk about that? Stagflation? No, but, ooh, yeah. I grew up with stagflation. It's not pretty.
It's ugly. But that's,
and that's certainly a possibility because you still have rising oil prices.
Exactly.
And that's a real concern.
It hit a record yesterday.
It hit a record. It flirted with $80 a barrel, which is not apparently an all-time record if you look, if you inflation adjust the numbers from 25 years ago. But it's still close enough for me.
That number would be 90 or so, I think.
I think so. I think so.
90, 91, or 2. But did it get to 80, actually get all the way to 80 like yesterday?
I thought that's what I read in the paper this morning,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think so.
That's not good.
No, not good.
We need it to be going the other way. It should be $60, not $80.
That's right.
But anyway, that's a problem. But apparently, there are some sectors that are doing good. I think technology is doing good. But Joan, that comes back to what we were talking about a minute ago about automation.
Right.
You know, people automating instead of hiring more people, and so it's a tough time. And you know, Joan, my recommendation to small business owners is check your position. Look around you. Don't believe that you're in a recession if you don't see indicators of a recession.
Right.
Talk to your customers. Don't just talk to them about what they need today. Talk to them about where they think their business is going to be a few months from now.
Exactly.
Try to lock in relationships. That's why multiple-year contracts are excellent.
Oh, always.
And so try to lock those in, but gird your loins. Be prepared, and don't be buying stuff today that are nice to have. Be focusing on things that you need to have.
Yeah, that's what you have to do.
In your business, yeah.
Right.
Joan, let's move over and look at, we haven't talked about the economic indicators, the forecasts that you guys publish in the book, in your on the front page, I should say.
Right.
We haven't covered those lately. GDP growth, you've got a new forecast there.
Right. Well, we say that in the second half, growth is going to slow. We don't really talk about what our number is for 2007, but we say it would reach 2 to 2.5% next year. So we're looking at kind of a pretty bleak second half of 2007, I think.
But you know, Joan, again, I'm trying to get our knickers untwisted here.
Untwisted.
Over this. Think about this, Joan. We have a $13 trillion economy. The closest economy to that is Japan at less than $5 trillion. We're more
right.
than double the largest economy. China is only at around $2 trillion, ladies and gentlemen. I know you don't believe that. I know you think that they're like $160 trillion, you know.
Seems like sometimes.
If you listen to all the hype. But yeah. it's like less than a fifth of our economy, like one-sixth of our economy. So $13 trillion, 2 to 2.5% growth on $13 trillion, that's, Joan, when China's doing 9% growth on less than $2 trillion, 2% on $13 trillion is better than that in terms of total.
Oh, that's too much math for me. I'll just have to take your word for it.
In terms of total output, it is.
Yeah.
So we just have to understand that at this level, in my opinion, 2.5 may be healthier than 4.5, if you think about it.
Yeah.
And I do. Stand by, Joan. Quick break. More to come. Good stuff right after these messages with our good friend Joan Pride. Stay with us.
Yep, he's done it again, folks.
Oh, no, not again. Oh, my. Oh, my. Oh, my goodness gracious.
Named to Talkers Magazine's Heavy 100 for the third year in a row.
It's not the first time. It won't be the last.
He's Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate.
We're back. It's 34 after the hour. Thanks very much for hanging around with me. If you just tuned in, welcome aboard. We're glad to have you here. If you've been listening already, as you know, we consider that a sign of high intelligence. You're one of the highly intelligent members of planet Earth. So welcome aboard. Joan Pride is our guest. She's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. And Joan, we're talking about your forecast box on page one of the Kiplinger letter. And we're down to the interest rate issue. You got another new forecast there for interest rates, and these are the long-term interest rates, Joan. They've been low.
Well, this is interesting. On mortgages and on 10-year Treasury notes, we're saying for now they're stable, but we think they're going to be rising in 2008, not going down.
Didn't Mr. Bernanke sort of forecast that recently this week in his?
I think he did.
His speech.
Yeah.
I think he said something about that.
Right.
Me not having a life, I would know that.
Yeah.
But I think he kind of indicated that. And Joan, that's been one of the puzzling things for folks, hasn't it? That in all this growth and everything, that the long term rates have stayed low.
Right.
That's been puzzling. But
that is a problem.
So isn't long term rates going up a little bit? Isn't that going to put a little bit of a damper on mortgage rates too?
I think we say mortgage rates are going up, so
yeah.
That's going to put a damper, I think, on housing. Or
I meant on housing.
Yeah,
yes.
I think it's going to keep housing in the doldrums, or it'll help keep housing in the doldrums, sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because even if they drop the Fed funds rate next week, that's not going to have an impact necessarily on the long-term rates.
That's right.
A great degree.
Right.
Inflation. Your arrows are going sideways on inflation, John.
Well, this is good news because we say inflation is going to hold steady and then ease in 2008, which would be a real big help to the Fed.
It really would be. And, you know, Joan, another thing that we didn't even talk about yet is the way the global economy is growing. You know, how many years have we complained that the other economies weren't helping us out?
We were carrying everybody.
Exactly.
Right?
Now the global economies look like it's growing, you know, at a pretty nice rate, and that's good for us. And with our dollar down, that's good for our exports, isn't
Absolutely,
it?
Yes.
So I really do see, Joan, there were times back in after 9/11 and a couple of other things that happened to us. You know, I was warning my audience to gird their loins, to really, you know, to tighten things up and to really try to watch every nickel and to be prepared for the worst.
Right.
And it didn't get that bad, but I'm just not pessimistic about where we are. I think we have some challenges. I think we got some problems we need to fix. I think we're going to have some some adjustments to go through over the next maybe year and a half or so.
Yeah, it may be a while before this really shakes out.
But I think what we're experiencing now, Joan, is going to be just a sort of an adjustment, whereas 30 years ago we would have already been in a recession.
That's right.
Our ability to manage information, Joan, our ability to improve our improvements in managing inventory, the type of an economy we have now compared to what we had, say, 30 years ago. I think I'm not going to say that we're recession proof, but I do believe that we now have the fine tuning adjustments in all the way down to small business, Joan, from the Fed all the way down to small business. We have the fine tuning adjustments that I believe keep us from getting too far off the tracks.
Right, and there's recessions. We could have a couple of quarters of the oxymoronic negative growth,
right,
without really harming the economy to a serious degree, or we could go into something that's deep and lasting, and I think you're saying it's going to be the former.
Right. But you guys still projecting 1.3 million jobs to be created in 2008.
Well, that's true. But
there's nothing bad about that.
No, I'd take that, sure.
Well, and you know, Joan, I keep coming back to, this is another thing about the economy. I keep going back to the fact that where we're different today than we have been in past downturns, mm-hmm, is, you know, after the dot-bomb crash, Joan, we had a lot of unemployment.
Yes. Oh, sure.
We don't have that now. The only people who are getting laid off now are the mortgage people.
There's a lot of
God
them
bless
getting
them.
Laid off. That's true.
I mean, I'm sorry, but the truth is, you know, probably some of them should never have had a job because of the way those companies were structured. But anyway, it's there are a lot of really good signs. Crude oil, Joan, we've already talked about that. That's not good. We've already talked about housing sales. Retail growth, if we could get it just to stay where it is, Joan, and not even grow or go down, that'd be like an accomplishment, wouldn't it?
Because we say leveling off at 3%. If it did that, I would think that would not be bad.
That wouldn't be bad, yeah. Retailers, I don't know what to tell you about going into the holidays. I'd be cautious if I were you. 2012, stay with us, right back.
Close to New Orleans, way back up in the woods among the evergreens, there stood a log cabin made
hour. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and we're having a great visit with our good friend Joan Pride, Senior Editor with the Kiplinger Editors. And they got an outstanding website I like telling you about, kiplinger.com, K-I-P-L-I-N-G-E-R.com. I hope you use it to your advantage. They got a lot of free stuff there, folks. It will help you out. Keep you posted on what's going on out in the marketplace. Important stuff for your small business. But if you want to have even more access to all the stuff that they do, you need to be a subscriber to their publications. And of course, the outstanding Kiplinger letter, it's been around since 1923, the one Joan and I work off of every week. That comes out every week on Friday. Gets you ready for the week ahead. It comes out on Friday by email, and you'll get it on Monday in the snail mail if you want it that way. And that'll give you access. That'll give you a username and password access to a lot of the background material to the things that are in the Kiplinger letter. And of course, they've got three biweekly letters. Joan, that's the California letter, the tax letter, and the agriculture letter, one for our outstanding farmers out there. And those are biweekly, every other week. And then there's a magazine that comes out every month, isn't there, Joan?
You bet. It's called Kiplinger's Personal Finance Magazine.
And that one is a very good one. I've got my new one around here somewhere. I was just looking for it. And, Joan, the toll-free number, please.
Our toll-free number is 800-544-0155.
Oh, here it is. It's the green issue. Isn't that the new one?
The green issue?
Yeah, the October issue is called the green issue.
Oh, okay.
What do you need to know to prosper in the new environment?
They haven't given it to me
yet. I've got my new one right here in front of me.
Ooh.
It's got a picture of a beautiful lady on the front, Christiana Wiley.
Okay.
Invest to help preserve the planet and to make money. For her, it's not either or. How about that? Right there. I'm not making this up, folks. I've got my Kiplinger Personal Finance Magazine. It's outstanding. And it's available on newsstands, too, by the way, folks. Joan, let's move over and talk about, I get so sick of our government sometimes.
Do you now?
Pete. I mean, we had a bridge to collapse. I am so sad about that. I'm very sorry for the families. I've got wonderful friends up in the Minneapolis area. They're being, their hearts are broken. The grief that they've had, this is a disaster. Besides the fact that it's disrupted, I'm sure it's disrupted the economy up there for a whole bridge just to go away.
Right.
But Joan, that's, how many tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of bridges we have in the United States? Bridges collapse. We now know that there was a design flaw of that bridge, and it had too much equipment on the bridge. They were overloaded.
Oh, did they confirm that?
I've heard that recently. I mean, I read about that. That they think now when you you're not supposed to put a certain amount of. Anyway, the point is that one bridge collapsed. They're not collapsing all around us. How long has it been since a bridge that size collapsed in the United States before?
Well, that I don't know.
Now, I'm not saying we don't need to do maintenance, but now what we're saying is urgent bridge repair. Will get first dibs on remaining cash from the Federal Highway Trust Fund. So I don't know.
I think any bridge repairs that are considered urgent should get the first cash. I mean, where else would you want the cash to go to?
Well, here's my point, Joan. Either you should have already done this, or I don't know. It bugs me.
Well, sure, they should have already done this, but they didn't, and that's why the fact that the bridge collapsed is making them wake up and say, hey, maybe this is something we've neglected that we shouldn't be neglecting anymore.
Yeah. I don't trust the government when they do knee-jerk things. I'm not saying they shouldn't do all this. I'm not saying that at all. It's just.
But again, that's the problem. It takes a crisis to wake them up.
And then they overreact, Joan. That's the knee-jerk part.
Well,
that's
they don't
the
seem to be reacting much yet to this.
Well, okay. Yeah, I'm sure you're right. You always are. But
here's
something they're doing good. The feds, tell us what the feds are going to do with the pilots, airline pilots.
Well, they'll raise the mandatory retirement age for airline pilots, too. And get this, they're going to raise it to 65.
Right.
It has been 60.
We've retired a lot of good pilots too soon, Joan.
Yeah, we sure need them.
We need those guys. We need those old heads. Joan.
What was the thinking back then? I'm assuming years ago the thought was you shouldn't be flying a plane after 60 or something like that.
Probably so.
But I think that's kind of old thinking, isn't it?
Well, there's no question about it, Joan. And the other thing is we didn't have that many airplanes back then. We had lots of pilots from World War II, from the Korean War, from Vietnam War. We had lots and lots of pilots and not enough seats to put them in. And so now it's different, though. We're not manufacturing as many military pilots as we used to have, but we are creating more seats for them to fly in. So
right.
that's the challenge that they've got. But Joan, as you know, I'm a pilot, and I've got about 1,100 hours in some of it in multi-engine aircraft. But I've been on many airplanes where I know, I was convinced that the guy in the right seat, at least, if not the left seat, didn't have as many hours as I did.
Now, what made you think that?
Because I asked them.
Oh.
And they told me. I asked some of these new right seat pilots, some of these co-pilots, how many hours you got? Oh, about 600 hours, you know. and so, you know, I'm glad. I like to see gray hair in the cockpit, Joan.
Sure.
So I'm glad they're doing this. This is a good thing.
Yeah.
Joan, here's another knee-jerk thing. The SEC is getting into the executive pay issue. Tell us about that.
Right. Well, and I think this has been coming for some time now. They want to get more disclosure on packages, on executive compensation packages, to find out what's really going on. And there's just been, I guess, too much of this that's been done as sweetheart deals, and they want to find out if that's true.
Let the companies take care of themselves. Let the investors and the customers and the employees decide if this is the right thing. The government doesn't need to be nosing around in businesses' financial statements, in my opinion. If they're not doing anything wrong, nothing fraudulent, leave them alone, government. Tintail, stay with us. We'll be right back. We're back. It's 7 till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and Joan Pryde is our guest. She's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. Let's see, Joan, over on page 3, some of the things Congress is struggling with right now. We're talking about spending another fall, struggling over spending bills.
Right.
What if we just didn't pay them if they didn't get their money?
What would happen?
Isn't that a genius idea? If you don't do your work, do you get paid?
Well, no. And if I don't pay my bills, you know, my electricity gets shut off and my home gets foreclosed
exactly,
on.
Exactly. So, you know, what's wrong with this picture, Joan, up there? They're not getting much done, are they?
No, really not. The big push this fall is going to be mainly the appropriations bills that haven't been finished.
Yeah. And I heard recently that they're increasing the debt level, right?
Oh, the debt limit, right.
Mm-hmm, debt limit, yeah.
Yeah.
So basically, do you think, Joan, that they wonder why their ratings are in the basement?
I think they do.
They probably do. I mean, they don't understand why they're being so maligned.
We don't, but they do. Yeah.
They don't understand why they're being so maligned, do they, Joan?
Right.
you guys say that the odds are the Democrats will still control Congress in 2009.
That's what we say. We say a slight expansion of their majorities in both the House and the Senate. Well, and I think it's just a numbers thing. The Republicans have to defend. There are more Republicans in the Senate up for re-election than there are Democrats. So there's more seats they have to defend. And you've seen some retirements announcements this week, including Senator John Warner, who's a longtime senator, mm-hmm. also Senator Chuck Hagel. So, and those were seats that were, particularly with Senator Warner, that were always considered safe Republican.
And Warner's is in a state where that Republican Senate seat just went Democrat.
You mean Senator Webb?
Webb, yeah.
Yes, and then see now when Senator Warner leaves, that the rumors around Virginia are that former Governor Mark Warner, a Democrat and no relation to Senator John Warner, will run for that seat, and they claim he's the prohibitive favorite.
Well, because he was a pretty popular governor, wasn't he?
Yes, he was, and he's more of a moderate. That's the kind of Democrat you'd more likely to get in Virginia.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So that's not good. So, yeah, mathematically, the numbers aren't stacking up. Never mind ideology. Never mind, you know, platforms. Never mind any other kind of things, anybody's coattails.
Right.
Mathematically, it's just not looking good for the Republicans in 2009.
Exactly. Yeah.
And some would say that, you know, it's not looking so good. In fact, I've got Republican operatives friends of mine who are basically saying that that the Democrats are going to win the White House in 08.
Right, but don't you think this is sort of a pendulum thing, that just pendulums seem to swing back and forth and back and forth, and this mm-hmm. is just another swing, and it'll go back the other way eventually?
Well, it's because one party gets in and forgets why they got elected and
right.
starts operating based on however they want to operate
right.
until the country gets disgusted with them, and then forgets that the other party did the same thing the last time, and
yeah.
we put them in, and then they get in, and then they start operating. I mean, look what the Republicans did it. The Democrats did it.
Oh, sure.
They've all done it, you know.
It's true. And now,
Joan, we come back to what I said earlier about I don't think I've ever seen a time when the soil was more fertile for an independent candidate.
No, I'll be curious to see how that works. I'm not
saying it's going to happen. I'm not saying it.
Oh,
I don't
no,
know where
backtracking.
It's going to come from.
Oh.
I think the soil is fertile for that. What do you think?
Well, I guess it's fertile. I just think there are so many hurdles that an independent candidate has to jump through that it's just not realistic to think they're going to do more than be a spoiler.
No, I didn't say that that structurally it could be done or it wouldn't be easy. I'm just saying that I think people would gravitate to somebody like that.
Yeah, but the only one who seems to be out there is Mayor Bloomberg.
Yeah, but he's not a good candidate for that, in my opinion, at all. But Joan, one of the things you point out finally as we wrap up is that long term is looking better for the GOP because of the census that's going to be taken in 2010 will show that more seats will become available in red states, and they'll be lost from blue states.
Right, so you'll have some rearrangement there, so the Republicans will gain some seats, and of course now, but we're talking that's several years away.
Exactly. Hey, Joan, thanks for being here. Good job today.
Thank you, Jim.
Take care of yourself, and we'll see you next time.
Okay.
Got to go for this hour. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners. This is Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, reminding you to always seek excellence, not perfection.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.